Hello, my friends. It's Tuesday, March 18th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belleville, your Red State refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you from Rolla J Studios in my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. And it goes down smooth. Hey! Hope y'all had a great St. Patrick's Day yesterday. Things were pretty good for us here as well. The creek has receded a bit. The floodwaters have receded, and we're staying dry at Rolla J Studios. Yesterday was a little bit of fun putting a couple tarps up on the roof. Got a little bit of a sunbreak to be able to do that. Trying to keep us warm and dry as the winter rains continue to pour down here in Southern Oregon. That's good news, though. Maybe to keep us from burning up in the summertime and keep that drought at bay. Coming up on today's show, Chuck Schumer has abandoned his book tour. We'll tell you why. In Texas, the abortion rights debate continues to heat up as they begin charging a midwife for providing abortion services. The constitutional crisis is here as Donald Trump and Tom Homan at ICE continue to say, "Judges, we don't need no stinking judges." We'll take a look at our regular Boycott Idaho segment, and I'll give you a look at the weird nightclub laws in the Handmaid State. And for our radical rant at the end of the show, I ask the important question, where the hell is Barack Obama? And for that matter, George W. Bush and Bill Clinton and a whole bunch of other people who ought to be out there sounding the alarm about our descent into American fascism. That's all coming up on the Radical Russ Show. Thanks for joining us. As you know from listening to the program, Chuck Schumer, the minority leader in the U.S. Senate, really betrayed the Democratic Party this week by voting for the continuing resolution, by actually voting to end cloture on a filibuster that was stopping the continuing resolution that empowers Musk and the Doge boys, that continues to slash and burn through our federal government. All of that has been given the green light because Chuck Schumer decided to back down from the filibuster. The Senate Democrats in the House stood firm. All but one of them refused to vote for the continuing resolution budget. Some of them doing so at great political peril, having residing in Trump-positive districts. But the Democrats in the House all stood firm, rejected this budget, and it looked as though the Democrats in the Senate were going to do so as well. Up as late as Thursday last week, Chuck Schumer was giving these speeches about how the Republicans need to come around and provide a clean continuing resolution that didn't have all these poison pills in it that benefited Musk and Doge and the continuing descent into American fascism. And then the very next day, changed his mind. Very next day said, well, we got to vote for the resolution. We don't want to shut the government down. It'd be bad to shut the government down, blah, 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 blah. All seen as a very strong betrayal of the Democrats. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez even tweeted to the effect that he's blown a hole in the relationship between Senate Democrats and House Democrats. And one has to wonder, what changed? What happened? And the theories going around out there is that Wall Street, which is one of his major benefactors, did not like the idea of a government shutdown, considering that the tariffs and the trade wars are already crashing the markets. They didn't want to see another crash thanks to a government shutdown. So doing what the rich people want, Chuck Schumer went and caved. So after that happened, people noticed that this week, Chuck Schumer had a book tour. Chuck Schumer is going to go out on a book tour for his new book on the rise of anti-Semitism in America. He wants to combat anti-Semitism, which is rich, coming from the highest ranking Jew in the United States government, who just that week, last week, was excoriated by President Trump as not being Jewish. Yeah, Trump went and said, as far as I'm concerned, Chuck Schumer is not Jewish, he's Palestinian. As if that was a slur somehow. But yeah, so you want to combat anti-Semitism, and yet you're going to bow down to the guy who says that you're not Jewish enough. So that got people pretty upset, figuring that maybe part of his calculation for kowtowing on the continuing resolution was not just Wall Street giving him a phone call or two, but also his book publisher, perhaps, saying, hey, you got to pass this thing. You can't be hanging around Washington, D.C. next week. You got a book tour. Now, there's no confirmation that's the case, but it does seem kind of a strange coincidence, right? So activists were looking forward to this book tour that he was supposed to be starting last night, figuring that, hey, let's go give WTF Chuck a piece of our mind. Well, that's not going to be happening either, because once again, Chuck Schumer has retreated to Democrats' cave. He has canceled his book tour. And in canceling the book tour, he has cited security concerns. Security concerns, as if he's worried about his physical safety. Well, what does that say to you when you've done something so heinous that you think the people in your own party might cause you harm? I mean, kind of a nice change of pace to see it happening on the left side for once, rather than the right side, all these right-wing Republicans who are terrified that MAGA is going to come after them somehow. And I'm not suggesting that we should. I'm not saying that we should inflict violence on Chuck Schumer in any way. But just the fact that he was afraid of it, that he was afraid of the reaction of his own base, I think is marking a turning point here. I saw a tweet the other day. I think it was maybe Adam Sower who had put this out, who had said something to the effect of, the problem is that Republicans are afraid of the GOP base, and Democrats are afraid of the GOP base, and nobody's afraid of the Democratic base. Well, maybe that is changing a little bit. Chuck Schumer was too afraid to go out on his book tour, knowing that there would be massive protests following him everywhere he goes. The other thing that gives lie to that is the fact that you got Bernie Sanders out there touring the country, going to all these red districts on his fighting oligarchy tour. And, you know, you got to hand it to Bernie in that he campaigns in the way that the right campaigns. He identifies a villain. The billionaires, the top 1%. I know it's a cliche now. It's a caricature of Bernie Sanders to be saying the billionaires and the millionaires on the top 1%. You know, it's a cliche, but that's how politics works. You got to pound your message into people's heads. Repetition works. That if anything you can say positively about Donald Trump is that he understands politics and how people work and how people think better than most of the politicians out there, and definitely better than most of the Democratic politicians out there. It really, folks, there, and I'm serious about this, the Democratic Party could do well to hire some consultants from World Wrestling Entertainment, from the WWE. Learn how to tell stories, how to create faces and heels, how to run the kayfabe, how to make sure that there is a story to be told. And that's what needs to happen. A story needs to be told here. Donald Trump is great at telling the story. Donald Trump will tell you the story that America's a hellhole, it's gone to hell, and it's all the left's fault, and he's the only one that can fix it. You know, the typical strongman, autocrat, dictator stuff. But it's a story, and there's a villain, and there's a hero. Democrats far too often fall into what I call the fact, science, reason, logic trap. That is, well, gosh, if we just point out this chart here that shows that under the Republicans, the economy does bad, and under the Democrats, the economy does well, why, the people will see that chart, and they'll see that the blue line is going up and the red line's going down, and that'll make them want to vote for us. How's that working out? Not so great, is it? Because if facts, science, reason, and logic won the day, there'd have been an unbroken string of Democratic presidents and Congresses going all the way back to FDR. Facts, science, reason, and logic do not win the day. Emotions, heroes, storytelling, that's what wins the day. So Chuck Schumer's bailed on this book tour. And the other thing that bothers me about him bailing on the book tour is when he cites that, oh, I'm afraid for the security. I'm afraid for, you know, it could get rowdy and, you know, out of control. He gives, once again, a little credence to the GOP by doing that. Because the GOP representatives have been told by their leadership to cancel their town hall meetings because of the bad optics and the bad clips that are coming out of them. And so what the Democrats have been saying is, look, the GOP is too afraid to meet their constituents. They're too afraid to face criticism. And so what does Chuck Schumer do? The same damn thing. So now you've kind of knocked out that leg of the stool when it comes to trying to fight back against the Republicans. You guys are too afraid to face your constituents. Oh, yeah? What about Chuck Schumer? What about Chuck Schumer? And I'm not sure what we can do to fix this. You know, I've been listening to some podcasts on this. Keith Olbermann's podcast, the Countdown podcast, had the idea of the Democrats splitting. Had the idea of take the 36 Democrats that didn't vote for the continuing resolution in the Senate and declare yourself a new caucus. Call yourself the New Democrats or the Fighting Democrats or whatever, and declare your own minority leader. But Chris, what's the senator from Connecticut who's been so great? Chris Murphy, that guy. He's been doing great lately as a Senate leader. Declare him the new Senate leader of the 36 New Democrats and decide that you 36 are going to always caucus together. And then the other 10, the Fettermans, Cortez Masto, Hassan, Schatz, the rest of them, Gillibrand, Schumer, they can be their own caucus. They can be the third party. The New Democrats could leave them in their wake and be the third party. Let Chuck Schumer be the leader of that, the old school Wall Street Democrats, whatever you want to call them. Now, that does put a fracture in the Democratic Party, does break the Democratic Party in the Senate in two, but what difference does it make at this point? The only reason it's of anybody would care to have 47 Democrats in the caucus would be to sustain a filibuster, right? So if you're not going to use the filibuster, what difference does it make if there's 47 of you or 36 of you? If the filibuster's not going to work. Now, I don't know the in-depth politics of the Senate and how this might all shake out, but at least it would be a radical move. At least it would show to the Democratic voters out there that some of them get it. Because, you know, the feeling out here on the streets, the feeling out here among the people is the feeling of being rudderless, of being directionless, of not having a party that believes in something. You know, say what you will about the Republicans, they believe in something. They believe government is the enemy. Government is bad. Government should get out of doing government stuff. Kind of breaks down into two coalitions. You got the Bible thumper Republicans. You know, they want to get government out of Medicare and Medicaid and all that kind of stuff because they think the church should handle that. Now, let the church handle soup kitchens and aid and help. You know, of course, if you're a church member and you tithe, right, church, you got to get paid too. Then you got your business Republicans who just don't like the social programs because, well, it costs business money. Don't like to have to spend extra money in taxes. If you have big social programs, you got to tax rich people. You got to tax corporations. And that gets in the way of the almighty profit. So they're able to form coalitions. They're able to work together, churchy and big business. And then, of course, you got the Nazis. That's the other leg of the three-legged stool of Republicanism these days. Churchy, big business, and Nazis. And the Nazis don't want the social programs because, well, they help the black people. They help the brown people. Can't be helping those people. There could be some fractures in this coalition coming up when some of these social programs that are helping white people start to hurt them. Wait, I thought you were just going to hurt the brown people. I thought you were just going to hurt the black people. I never thought the leopard would eat my face. So there could be some fractures down the line, but for the moment, the Republican Party is pretty united. pretty much marching in lockstep behind their leader. The orange-faced gibbon, that's the other thing that bothers me. Just to take a detour for a second. They all see him, don't they? Like, they can visually see Donald Trump, right? They can see that he's got all that orange makeup on, that he doesn't blend back past his jawline, right? They can see that, right? They can see how he stands, like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, kind of at that weird angle, right? They can see that, can't they? They can see his big, fat, gelatinous ass on the golf course. They can see it all, right? They can see this guy. And they still fall behind him. And they put out these posters of him, you know, all buff and handsome and, they can see him, can't they? it just blows me away. And like, you know, I know they live in the Fox News bubble and they get this constant diet of praise and whitewashing of Trump, but you would think something would break through. Like you've seen the clips where he's lusting after his daughter, right? You've seen that. You heard the Access Hollywood tape. You actually heard him say he likes to grab women by the pussy. That's the thing that's just blown my mind throughout this entire Trumpocene era since 2015. You know, I've always thought that the United States had a chance to, you know, fall into fascism, but I really thought it was going to be some, you know, religious holy man type of fascism, some sort of cult like thing in that respect. I never would have thought the guy from Home Alone 2, the guy that was the butt of the jokes in the 80s and the 90s, could ever possibly be this figure. It's just amazing to me. All right, sorry, detour over. So Chuck bails on the book tour, undercuts the Democratic position when it comes to teasing MAGA and the right wing over not holding their town halls. Chuck Schumer's got to go. I think we all agree that at this point, Chuck Schumer is finished as any sort of actual leader. And you know, his day has long since passed. These guys, Chuck Schumer in his late 70s, is he 80 yet? I'm not sure exactly how old he is. I think he's in his 80s. I know Dick Durbin is. These guys are still living in the 20th century. They're still living in the world where there was actual good faith opponents on the other side. And they can't understand we're dealing with a cult. We're dealing with a fascist movement. And it's time to get people in their place who understand the context of where we're at. I know people are chomping at the bit to get Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to primary him. I don't know if that's the right move. She's got a House election to re-election to run for in 26, which she should probably easily be re-elected. And I can see her easily continuing to get reelected in that district in the Bronx and building up a base of power and maybe even becoming the House Speaker at some point. If, again, the Democrats can get past their love of norms and this idea of seniority and it's your turn. That was so frustrating when there was a senior position open for House Oversight Committee, the chair of the committee, and it came down to, shall we pick Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the popular rising star, the charismatic leader who is getting easy FaceTime on all of the network shows, or should we pick 70-something-year-old Jerry Connolly? Who? Yeah, who? Exactly. Jerry Connolly. That's who they picked. That's who the Democrats picked. Because of seniority, because it was his turn, because of the order and decorum. Long past time that we start doing something radical. This Democratic Party needs to start getting a little more radical for the times. War on women has accelerated. We just got news out of Texas where they've made the first arrest of someone being alleged to provide illegal abortions. The woman's name is Maria Margarita Rojas. She's 48 years old. She's a midwife in the Houston area. And Attorney General Ken Paxton, the corrupt, multiply indicted attorney general there, has announced charges against her yesterday. The first abortion provider who has faced criminal consequences since Texas has passed their abortion ban in 2022. Paxton said in a statement, quote, "In Texas, life is sacred. I will always do everything in my power to protect the unborn, defend our state's pro-life laws, and work to ensure that unlicensed individuals endangering the lives of women by performing illegal abortions are fully prosecuted. Texas law protecting life is clear, and we will hold those who violate it accountable. Unless it's a mother swimming across the Rio Grande from Mexico, and then we'll put up barbed wire in the middle of the water to make sure she and her kid drown." Oh, I'm sorry that he didn't say that last part. That was just me. Pro-life Texas charging a woman with providing abortions. Locally, she's known as Dr. Maria. The allegations say that she unlawfully employed unlicensed individuals who falsely presented themselves as licensed medical professionals. Under Texas law, for providing illegal abortions, this woman could face life in prison. Life in prison for providing abortion health care to women. And she would lose her state medical license. Texas, of course, is like Idaho, one of these states that will not provide an abortion in any circumstance except to save the life of a pregnant patient. But as we know, these exceptions for the health of the mother, the life of the mother, require the mother to get at death's door before that exception kicks in. You set up a test there that requires the woman to risk her life to get the abortion care to save her life. It's insane. And of course, last year we had the case of Kate Cox. The woman had to leave Texas, had to fly out of Texas for emergency care, even though a court had said she should have access because of the medical emergency. Again, Texas wouldn't let her. Paxton, that attorney general, intervened, said anyone that tried to help her would face felony charges. And they don't even want to, you know, the other thing about these abortion people when they were attacking Roe v. Wade all for the last 50 years is saying, we just want to return it to the states. We just want to return it to the states. Well, no, they want to do this nationally. Returning to the states was the first step. The next step is to go after it nationally. Last December, Paxton, the attorney general of Texas, sued a New York doctor for prescribing an abortion pill to an in-state resident, demanding that the doctor in New York pay $100,000 for every violation of Texas's ban. So this is Texas trying to reach outside of Texas to stop abortions. And the thing is, once again, there is no good faith debate on the right. They said they wanted to return it to the states. That was always bullshit. Because the whole reason behind their opposition to abortion is the unscientific and illogical view that a newly fertilized egg is equivalent in rights and humanity to a living, breathing human being. And I'm sorry, folks, an existing human's rights always outranks a potential human's rights. As far as I'm concerned, Roe v. Wade was the compromise. According to the polls out there of American people, 2023 Gallup polled this last time, found only 12% of Americans think abortion should always be illegal. 1 out of 8 people think abortion should always be illegal. 69% of the people, meanwhile, believe abortion should be fully legal in the first trimester. And that was the beauty of the compromise of Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade recognized that as the fetus develops, it becomes more and more fully human. Okay. So the idea of aborting a baby at 8 months, 3 weeks, boy, that's pretty much a baby at that point. You know, you could take that baby out of the womb and put it on some machines, you know, in the NICU, and that baby would live. It could live without its mother. That was the beauty of the compromise that we recognized in the first trimester. The woman has all the rights. In the third trimester, the baby's got some rights. And in that middle trimester, a little 50-50. And different states approach that differently, but that was the general consensus. Roe v. Wade set up the fetal viability test. Now, I've got a problem with the fetal viability test in that as technology grows, that fetal viability week will push earlier and earlier, right? Right now, we can save babies at 22 weeks, but, you know, we'll have, who knows, in the future, there'll be artificial wombs that can save babies at 8 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever. So I've never liked that as a compromise, but at least it was a compromise. As far as I'm concerned, I'd have abortion be legal almost until the baby is born. If I had been knocked into a coma, I were a female, if I were knocked into a coma, and while I was in that coma, the orderly from, what was that Tarantino movie? Kill Bill. Yeah. The orderly rapes me while I'm in a coma and I become pregnant while I'm in that coma. And I'm still in that coma and that baby's growing and growing. And 8 months into that coma, I wake up and whoa, yesterday I wasn't pregnant. And today, wow, I'm 8 months pregnant. I would be screaming to get that kid out of me. I'd be screaming to abort that kid. And I think I should have the right to in that sort of circumstance. That was the compromise. We had a Roe v. Wade that was working just fine. But they couldn't handle that compromise because, again, they have this illiterate, unscientific, illogical belief that a clump of cells, a zygote, has the exact same or actually superseding rights to the woman that's hosting it. That fetus has the right to interfere with that woman's life because it's got superseding rights in their view. Not once it's born. Once it's born, hell with it, right? It can starve. We won't give it any health care. We'll make sure it doesn't have any education to read or write. But, you know, once it's in, you know, as long as it's a fetus, we love it, right? Roe v. Wade was the compromise, but they can't handle that compromise because they believe the zygote is the baby. So when they came out and said, oh, we just want to return it to the states, you can't believe that. That's like that. From their point of view, abortion is murder. And so in hearing that excuse from them, we just want to return it to the states, would be like them saying, we just want to let murder be illegal in our states, but murder can be legal in your state. They were never going to stop at that. They were never going to stop at just having abortion illegal in their states. To them, abortion is murder. And it has to be illegal nationwide. The other reason for them it has to be illegal nationwide is because of the easy availability of Plan B pills, abortion pills, or just traveling across state lines to go to some blue state and get your abortion. Can't have that. So they're going to continue to fight for a national abortion ban. And this is the civil rights issue of our time. This is the slavery issue of our time. For what is illegal abortion but birth slavery? Their point of view is that if a woman has sex and she becomes pregnant as a result of that sex, she must now be enslaved for the next 9 months in the service of creating a baby. You'll hear them in their remarks about it. Well, why don't you just keep your legs closed? You know, never mind the fact that there's rape, right? And incest. But
why don't you just keep your legs closed?
They see pregnancy as the consequence of sex that cannot be denied. That if you had sex, then you must have your baby. If you didn't want to have a baby, you never should have had sex. Now, this doesn't apply to the men, of course. Right? Men can just spill their seed wherever they want to. You really want to stop all abortions. Provide mandatory vasectomies to every 12-year-old boy. Mandatory reversible vasectomies to every 12-year-old boy. They turn 18. If they decide they want to be parents sometime, they could reverse the vasectomy. And then, you know, we wouldn't have to worry about abortions, right? Everybody that got pregnant would get pregnant by a man who had decided that he wants to have the potential to have kids. But let's just change it so that every 12-year-old boy in America is forced by the government to have a mandatory vasectomy at age 12, and then they can reverse that. We'll have the government pay for the reversal, too. That's fine. We'll have the government pay for the reversal. No out-of-pocket expense to the boys, but let's have every boy at age 12, mandatory vasectomy. Well, what's that? You're not comfortable with the idea of the government mandating how people use their bodies? You're not comfortable with the government mandating certain medical procedures and stuff? Huh. Isn't that interesting? I see a lot of reports that ask if we're approaching a constitutional crisis. Are we getting too close to a constitutional crisis? Folks, we are already in a constitutional crisis. As I mentioned on the show yesterday, we are already at the ignoring courts and jailing enemies phase of American fascism. This deportation that happened with the Venezuelans, sending them off to El Salvador, this was last Friday. Trump invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. Reaching all the way back to these zombie laws from the 18th century. Alien Enemies Act of 1798 to deport 200 Venezuelan immigrants, alleging they were all gang members. Now, first of all, the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, which, by the way, was used in the 20th century. It was used to justify the internment of Japanese Americans like George Takei. The Japanese internment camps, the backing of that was the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. But there's some conditions on that Alien Enemies Act. Number one, you got to be in a declared war against those enemies. We're not at war with Venezuela, last I checked. But Trump just says, well, it's a war because they're invading us, because they're all illegal immigrants, they're invading, and so it's a war. I know Congress has handed over a lot of its power over these past few decades, but I do believe the power to declare war still exists in the Congress's purview. None of them have declared war on Venezuela. And, of course, they have to be enemy combatants, and they're not enemy combatants. It's just a big mess. There's no justification for using the Alien Enemies Act, and the judge rejected that on Friday. For the reasons I give you and others. And he ordered that any of the planes that had left the U.S. that were in the air, ordered that they be returned. They turn around right now. And the Trump administration just ignored him. Just let them go on to El Salvador. They even laughed about it, right? The president of El Salvador posted a laughing emoji, you know, saying, oh, too late. Oopsie, too late. As far as returning the planes, Marco Rubio retweeted that. So there they are laughing, literally laughing in the judge's face, online at least, about ignoring his orders. Now, the Trump administration is trying to play cutesy with us, saying that the judge sent a verbal order before takeoff, and the written order came too late. Now, at the press conference recently, a reporter asked, does the White House feel the need to reply with a verbal order from this judge? And Levitt responded, as I said All of the planes subject to the written order of this judge departed U.S. soil, U.S. territory before the judge's written order. Reporter responds, but what about the verbal order, which of course carries the same legal weight as the written order, and said for the planes to turn around if they were in the air? Levitt, the spokesperson, says, well, there's actually a question about whether a verbal order carries the same weight as a written order, and our lawyers are determined to ask and answer those questions in court.
What?
They are trying to say that a verbal order from a judge doesn't count? A judge saying something in his courtroom as an order to the plaintiffs does not count? Yeah, try that in your next court appearance. The judge makes a proclamation and you say, you got to write it down first, judge. Yeah, give that a shot. But they're openly attacking the rule of law here. The judge had a hearing yesterday, brought in the government asking more questions about this, and they wouldn't respond to the judge. He was asking about the two planes that were in the air did not turn around, and they offer the mealy-mouthed excuse, well, by the time he did that written order, those planes were over international waters. That doesn't count if they're over international waters. The hell it doesn't count. He wasn't making a ruling about a crime taking place over the Gulf of Mexico. That's right, Gulf of Mexico. He was talking about an illegal act that happened by moving the prisoners in the first place. That's the illegal act. It doesn't matter that they're now over the Gulf of Mexico. And they wouldn't even respond, talking about the third plane that hadn't taken off before the written order, took off after the written order. Now, backing up Trump in attacking our rule of law, Senator Tom Cotton, which again, hard to believe that's his actual name. Senator Tom Cotton wrote, quote, these far left resistance district court judges are under the impression they were elected president. The idea of ordering the president to turn around a plane filled with violent, criminal, illegal aliens is outrageous. And back this up, Fox News put up a picture of the judge, just so all those MAGA can see exactly what he looks like. And this post from Cotton, it follows on the heels of others that are saying, you know, what kind of system is this where one judge can overrule the president who was elected by all the people? It's called the rule of law. It's called the American Constitution. It's exactly what judges are supposed to do. And presidents are supposed to take care that the laws are faithfully executed. Faithfully execute the laws, and the judges don't have to stop you from breaking them. While this was happening, the judges in this case are continuing to face threats. Tom Homan, who's the human thumb in charge of ICE right now, is openly bragging about defying the courts. On Fox News Monday morning, he said, quote, I wake up every morning loving my job because I work for the greatest president in the history of my life. We're going to make this country safe again. I'm proud to be part of this administration. We're not stopping. I don't care what the judges think. I don't care what the left thinks. We're coming. And that's their attitude. They don't care what the judges think. They've already kidnapped green card holder Mahmoud Khalil, taken him without warrant, arrested him, taken him to an ICE processing facility in Louisiana, thousands of miles away from his family, his lawyers. Brown University, a legal visa holder there named Rasha Alawi, was deported, despite having a court order blocking her removal. Folks, they don't care what the courts say. I've said this for a long time. Donald Trump comes from the ethos of fuck you, make me. Hey, you can't do that. Fuck you, make me. And Democrats don't seem ready to counter that. Well, but the court said, well, fuck you, make me. And until we get some leadership that understands that it's going to take force, it's going to take force to stop him. Now, that can be the force of law, the force of law enforcement, the force of politics, the force of people in the streets. And I hope we can keep it to just that level of force. But once the administration, once the president who swore an oath to uphold the law has decided not to, who's going to make them? Time for our regular segment on Boycott Idaho, why you should avoid the handmade state. Calling on all my listeners to boycott the Idaho potato, because no red state is more directly associated with one product than Idaho and the potato. Hell, they brag about it on their license plates. Famous potatoes. So next time, skip the potato, skip the fries, get yourself some onion rings, skip the baked potato, get yourself a salad. Skip the potato. Let's put the hurt on one of these red states. Let's make an example of one of them. And I always think Idaho is a great red state to make an example of because there's so few people of color living there that we won't hurt any of them. All right, for today's Boycott Idaho segment, a look at their bars. And this is, you know, this may just be a matter of personal taste, not necessarily a reason to boycott. But I do think that Idaho's bar tavern laws do give you kind of a peek at what they think of adults and their freedoms. So first of all, there are no strip clubs in Idaho. And that may be the case in your state as well. But, you know, I moved to Portland, Oregon for quite a few years, and strip clubs were a big part of the culture there. You know, not seen as something seedy necessarily. It was just a, you know, play. People would go there for dinner, believe it or not. There's strip clubs that have regular dinners that are pretty decent dinners. And it's just part of the culture out there. And it might not be for you, but there's a certain freedom aspect to this, a certain free speech aspect, a First Amendment right to performance. You know, if a woman wants to get on stage, take off her clothes and shake her moneymaker, then that's free speech expression. It's art. It may not be art that you like. You might not think it's the best art, but it's art. So what's going on in the state of Idaho with respect to these strip clubs is that it's illegal there for anyone to dance nude in a private facility to an audience of adults. They do have so-called dance clubs, but they're pretty prude. First of all, any club where dancers are exposing themselves for tips cannot serve hard alcohol. You cannot get a shot in any place where a woman is dancing for tips. You cannot get a shot. No hard alcohol, no cocktails. There are places where you can get beer and wine in these clubs, but the dancers in those clubs must wear bikinis. Breasts and nipples must be covered if they're selling beer and wine. Because, you know, the combination of 3-2 beer alcohol and a naked nipple, who knows what chaos could ensue. In fact, in Idaho, in one of those beer and wine strip clubs, the bikini you have to wear to be legal while you're dancing for tips covers more than a bikini that you could wear on the beach. Like, you could wear a thong on the beach in Idaho. Not that Idaho's great beaches. They have lakes and stuff, right? But you could wear a thong on the beach in public outside for free. But if you walked inside and started dancing for tips, you'd have to put on a fuller bikini bottom because your butt crack would be exposed. That's the strip club laws in Idaho. Now, there are clubs where you can actually see topless dancers. But in those clubs, no alcohol may be sold. You must be completely sober if you're going to look at naked boobies. Now, in those cases, those clubs in Idaho that have the naked boobies, since they can't sell alcohol, they reduce their entry age from 21 to 18. That's kind of a weird fix, isn't it? We're so worried about the boobies, you can't drink, but we'll let you come in if you're 18. Which, hey, trust me, that was kind of a nice thing when I was 18, 19 years old. But here's the other thing that's weird about Idaho's bar laws, their club laws. They're so worried about the boobies. You can't mix the alcohol and the boobies. But you can smoke a cigarette. Yeah, Idaho does have a Clean Air Act, a Clean Indoor Air Act that, you know, a lot of states passed back in the 20th century, but it only got rid of smoking in restaurants and public buildings. Smoking in bars is legal. So you may walk into one of these strip clubs where you can't get a shot of alcohol. You can only get beer and wine because there's a woman in a bikini walking around. But go ahead and smoke them if you got them. Light up the old cancer sticks. That's not a problem. Idaho is such a weird state. As we look across the landscape politically, we see that Bernie Sanders is out there on his Stop Oligarchy tour. And we've got a few others that are out there campaigning, trying to wake up the people. Tim Walz has gone out on tour, exposing the GOP for canceling their town hall meetings, going to these red state districts, talking to the people, fight oligarchy, which is great. I'm glad they're out there doing that. But it opens up one big question for me. Where in the world is Barack Obama? We've got, for that matter, where's Joe Biden? Where's Bill Clinton? Where's George W. Bush even? For some reason in American politics, we have this unwritten rule that after you've been president, you disappear. You go off into the sunset, never to be heard from in politics again, except for maybe a speech at the nominating convention. Convention time comes around, we'll wheel out the old ex-presidents to give their thumbs up for whoever we nominated. But after that, it's back to the book tours, it's back to obscurity, or in George W. Bush's case, it's back to painting some lousy paintings. Why is that? Who came up with this norm that ex-presidents need to stay out of the way? Back in the day, back in when it was developed, I suppose it had a purpose. You know, professional courtesy. Don't comment on the current administration. Don't try to sway the public opinion one way or another. I guess that made some sort of sense back in Eisenhower's day. It makes no sense today. We've got a party that is wandering, lost in the wilderness, and its most popular leader of the century is missing in action. Where the hell is Barack Obama? I can already hear some people, it's not his responsibility. He was president for 8 years. He did all the work he could do. Bullshit. This is an all hands on deck moment. This is a time when not only should Barack Obama be out there, it ought to be Barack and Biden and Kamala Harris and Hillary Clinton. Bill Clinton can stay home. Stay home, Bill. Don't need you. But the rest of them? Hell, throw John Kerry and Al Gore on that mix, too. Everybody from the Democratic Party who has run for president or been president in the 21st century should be on our TVs, out in the public, out filling arenas, explaining to the American people what the hell is going on here, how we're descending into fascism, and what good government could be. I keep talking about the need for storytellers, the need for heroes. How hard would it be for Barack Obama to get out there and start saying, hey, you remember that awesome Affordable Care Act that we put together? That health care that we got for you? Trump's taking it away. How hard would it be for Joe Biden to be out there? Hey, you remember all those great union jobs and the CHIPS and Science Act we put together, the infrastructure law? Trump's taking that away. How hard would it be to get Al Gore out there talking about, hey, you remember when Los Angeles used to be smoggy all the time? And then we had the EPA and we cleaned up all the smog. Remember how we used to have an ozone, a hole in the ozone layer? And then we got together with the other countries and we decided to ban CFCs and now the ozone is fixed. That's all going away under Trump. Every one of them, Gore, Kerry, Clinton, Harris, Biden, Obama, should be out on tour right now. Where are they? It's moments like this that continue to contribute to that feeling amongst the left, amongst those of us out here that are looking for leadership, that it's all just a game to y'all. Well, we tried running for president and it didn't work. Oh, darn. I guess I'll have to go write a book. You were out there on the campaign trail, Joe Biden, telling us that Trump was fascist. Kamala Harris was telling us Trump's a fascist. Warning us about the terrible things that would happen, and they're happening. And when you don't show up, when you're missing in action, it makes us all feel like you didn't really mean it. Or if you did mean it, you meant it in, oh, well, you should have voted for me. I'm rich. I'll be fine. I guess you guys are fucked. That's the feeling it's giving right now. The feeling that, oh, Michelle and Barack, they'll be fine. Oh, Joe and Dr. Jill, they'll be fine. Kamala and Doug, they'll be fine. What about the rest of us? Where are our leaders? Barack Obama was the most popular president of my lifetime. He should be out there right now. I don't know what it's going to take for us to convince them to do that. It seems we've got this Democratic Party that's so wed to these norms and traditions. It's time maybe just to blow it all up. Like I was talking earlier about Keith Olbermann's idea of, you know, splitting the Democratic Senate. Because right now the fight isn't there. This isn't on the left here, on the Democratic side, this is no longer a fight between moderates and leftists or centrists and progressive. This is a fight versus, you know, old school 20th century political norms versus new school 21st century online social media attention economy 24-hour news cycle. That's what we need right now. Our biggest stars come out on the stage and tell us things are not okay. Here's what we need to do. So until I start to see some serious reconfiguring in the Democratic Party, I really fear for our future. It seems like they're just on a coast right now. Like, oh boy, Trump's messing things up so bad right now. Come 2026, ooh boy, we're going to take the House back. Assuming there's going to be free and fair elections in 2026. I can already see us ramping up to martial law in the summer of 2025. They're turning the screws so quickly, they're turning up the heat on that boiling pot of water the frogs are in. You know that metaphor? The frogs don't jump out if you turn up the water slowly. They don't notice that the water is boiling. But if you turn it up too quick, frogs will notice it's boiling and jump out of the water. They're turning up the water real quick. They're turning up the heat fast. They want Froggy to jump. They want to see massive, violent protests. They want the excuse to lock us down into martial law. And once we're locked down into martial law, oh my gosh, midterm elections. Well, goodness, we're under martial law right now. Couldn't possibly pull off an election, could we? You don't think that's possible? You don't think these Republicans have been acting in a manner that suggests they don't fear the voters? That they're not worried about the next election? Or maybe that's not the plan. Maybe they just have it hacked already. Maybe those Doge kids have hacked our elections. Now, I know we're supposed to say, oh, we have free and fair elections. There's so many safeguards. There's so many precincts. There's so many places. Folks, any system that involves computers at any point can be hacked. And I'm not so sure it wasn't hacked for 2024. I'm not so sure that the Republicans set up a trap of always bitching about elections. Oh, all these elections are rigged. All elections are rigged. The election is rigged. It's all rigged. All the elections are rigged. So that Democrats had to come back and say, oh no, our elections aren't rigged. Our elections are free and fair. Our elections are absolutely fair. They're absolutely fair. There's no way to rig an election. The elections are absolutely fair. So that when the Republicans do rig an election, we can't come back and say, hey, no, this election was rigged. Comes looking like Boy Who Cried Wolf, right? Oh, I thought you said elections weren't rigged. Maybe Trump was right in 2020 and it was rigged. I think we've got ourselves stuck in this trap. Where now we have to say, as a priori knowledge, that all elections are fair. Maybe they're not. Maybe they've already been rigged. And it goes down smooth. Hey! All right, folks, that's all the time I got this morning. And you may have noticed I shortened the show to just 5 topics rather than 7. We'll stick with that for the next few shows, see how that runs. Trying to get back in the saddle is a little more difficult than I expected, but it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for listening. The Radical Rush Show is produced, directed, researched, written, recited, posted, and catered by me, Radical Russ Belville, and governed by Creative Commons share-alike licensing. My main theme is We Love the Herb by Herbal Nation, and interstitial music is by freestockmusic.com and VTEMO, courtesy of freetouse.com/music. You can contact me by email at radicalruss@gmail.com. Call the message line at 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. And reach me on social media on Blue Sky at radicalruss.com and nowhere else. You can support this podcast financially by donating to Radical Russ on Venmo, Rad Russ on Cash App, or via PayPal on my website at radicalruss.com. Get this podcast on Spotify, Apple Music, or my website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and until next time, take care of each other.